Blog Talk Radio.
This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith and Stacey Hopkins in the house.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm sitting over here at Highland Cigar Company, and I can't tell who is at the table with me in its entirety, but there's a very dangerous group of politicals.
Well, it can't be that. Wait. Hold up. It can't be that dangerous because you left your girl out the party. But see how y'all do me.
No. Oh, you can. Oh, you go. Oh, you will be. You will be coming in. But this is the initial stage or something. So You know, we getting it together. So it's coming. Oh, it's coming.
My feelings are hurt.
Oh, you coming in, honey? Don't worry about it. But however, you know, I'm excited to be where I'm at with this group of people today. Some of them may come over and speak as we talk about the topic that we're talking about today, which is campaign finance reform. We've actually had some type of conversation about this particular subject already as we've been sitting around the table drinking beer and smoking cigars. But,
you know, I can smoke a cigar, too. So I'll just put that
like
out
I said,
there.
Honey, you coming. Now,
okay.
One of the things that we did on Down South and Dirty History, you know, we've said that we're going to do is bring information to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to talk about campaign finance reform. But I have another piece of news that I got today that for all in the event, I guess we just go into kind of our burn treatment we use in this one. If you are a follower of social media, we all know C.J. Pearson. He's a young guy from Pearson, Georgia. He's about 13 years old. He's been known for his YouTube videos bashing President Obama. And last week, he came out and said he can't do conservatives like he used to. And he was the chairman of the teams for Ted Cruz. They can't do them because of the racial inequality that the establishment is supporting. Well, today, DJ Pearson said these three words, feel the burn.
Yeah. I love it.
Because he says, he's looking at, there will be a statement coming out later in the week, possibly by tomorrow. So this is an exclusive catch for all those in the political know. But this is a major move because you're looking at people like him who are seeing African-American conservatives who are seeing that the Republican establishment cannot and will not support. Now, if you're an African-American, at any given point in time, you are still feeling the pressure of what's happening with our people. And we just have, you know, a lot of them have different avenues in which they're trying to solve the problem in our community. You know, any good, healthy community has a conservative and progressive side to its political life. But a lot of them are seeing that the way that the establishment conservative establishment is moving forward on this issue has no bearing and has no solutions for us as a community. And he also, being that he's looking at our side now, also realizes that Hillary Clinton isn't any balance. So he's exploring See, he's feeling the burn. He's exploring it. And we applaud that because that shows that in America today, we are truly ready for a political revolution.
Can I say something about CJ? And I hope CJ is listening and will, we'd love to talk to you on the show. But one of the reasons I didn't pile on, you know, when he first came out and people on the left, some of us piled on him and really said some hateful things. He's a young man who's forming his opinions. And even though I did not agree with him, I was seeing his thought process and evolution. And, you know, I'm a mom. So, you know, it was like, you got to let kids find their way. I'm proud of him. And I'm not saying this because he's on our team, but because just watching his evolution, and I'm very proud of his parents for giving him the freedom to do that and for protecting them. Protecting him and doing this, but I really, I'm proud of him. I look forward to hearing more of what he has to say. He's a very astute young man, and this is the future. But it's kind of a wake up call for Democrats and Republicans to notice, you know, watch his evolution and thought process, because that's pretty much what we're seeing and hearing out in public, and Republicans. Are starting, there's a lot more Republicans who are feeling the burn. So, CJ, if you're listening, holla at us. But
right. Now,
I just wanted to say that.
Right. So tell everybody what's going on Thursday.
Yes, this Thursday, it is a down south and dirty road trip. We are heading up to Gainesville, Georgia, Hall County. We are going to be a guest also with Black Burner, Anoa Changa. We will be at the Murraysville, Georgia Public Library, 4796 Thompson Bridge Road, from 6:30 to 7:30 on Thursday the 10th. We're going to be meeting and talking with other Bernie supporters in the Hall County area. This is really exciting for us because this is not an area where you usually see a lot of liberals, and they're starting to come out the closet. And so,
this is the thing why this is kind of important more than, you know, if you're a Georgian, Hall County represents something because this is where our governor and our lieutenant governor hail from.
Yeah.
So this is striking at home. This is striking a blow in the neck of the Republican establishment here, because this is where the two top offices in our state hail from. So for there to be people feeling the burn in Hall County.
In Hall County. And we're prepared to be asked. Right. And we're coming up there to tell them some things that they can do. The campaign is pushing, you know, it's go time for all of us. And a lot of people are hungry for information as to what they can do. We're going to be presenting options, you know, talking about some of the things that we've done, encouraging others to get active in their own communities. And Feel the Burn is always a bottom-up kind of thing, and it's also a template for things to continue, whether Bernie wins or not. We feel strong.
Yes, because this political revolution.
It's a revolution, for real.
We have to be able to take this thing not only from the presidential level, but as I was saying, we have a conversation here today. We're talking about city politics, different counties' politics, and this and other. So people have to be prepared to take this revolution home.
Exactly.
It's not about taking 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's about taking City Hall East and West here in Atlanta. It's about taking the municipal complex in Stone Mountain. It's about taking the municipal complex in East Point, the county government building in LaGrange, Georgia. It's, you know, retaking Savannah, retaking District 43 back from the Republicans. It's about all of those different situations. We got to have people who are prepared to go back and fight those fights.
and we've got, I'm seeing candidates who are running, who feel the burn and who are running, that need the support and a little bit, just a little bit of your time to help them win. You can't send a general in without an army, people. So,
right.
We're heading up there. We're looking forward to it. We're very excited. We're planning, you know, whatever we do, we're going to have a good time doing it. Because if it ain't fun, then, you know, it really doesn't matter. You gotta keep that aspect of life. But we are very thankful for Linda Sipple for inviting us up. And we just hope to see more of it. You want to talk about what's going on with the burn treatment? Because this is a kind of a good lead-in.
Yeah. Right. You know, this is kind of what we were going through already. But, you know,
let's talk real quick. Go ahead.
You know, if anybody's watching what's going on social media, this, that, and the other, there's a lot of movement and momentum taking place inside of the Sanders campaign.
Don't listen to those poll numbers, people. Do not let those poll numbers psych y'all out.
Because the poll numbers, some of those are bought, and I need people to understand that. Some of those are bought. So we have to be very careful about making sure that we are not allowing somebody's ability to pay for a certain set of numbers to be able to have the effect of changing our mindset or getting us demoralized. So we have to be very careful with that. Now, one of the other things that we have, you know, going on, that we have a major mobilization taking place, particularly here in the South, and being focused on South Carolina. So if you are, if you feel the burn and you are looking for something to do, South Carolina needs people to either come down, go over, come up to canvas, and they also need people who are willing to pick up phones and call in.
Absolutely.
Call in, make phone calls to the different districts and precincts inside of South Carolina that are needed to help make that one of the, because that's one of the first states that will go down in the South. So we need a victory. We know we got a really good feeling that we're going to take Iowa and New Hampshire, but we do. But to take down South Carolina will give us the momentum to sweep through the rest of the South, and it'll be a road to the nomination that would be made a lot easier if we were able to capture South Carolina.
And, you know, on that note, I was talking with a fellow burner in Cobb County. And, you know, they were saying, you know, Georgia, we're used to kind of being like the redheaded stepchild. And, you know, people were like, you know, I'm hearing a lot of, well, when are they going to, you know, do something in Georgia? We need somebody here in Georgia. Making phone calls is one of the best ways to direct your campaign resources. And, making phone calls, you know, you do them in a certain series. You know, they're used to pull data. This data is very important for the campaign to know how to direct their resources. We need to identify who's a Bernie supporter, who is not a Bernie supporter, so they don't waste time on those who are already in something else. Scott, we're getting a lot of background on you. But one of the things why this is so important, if you want to see the Bernie Sanders campaign in your state, we got to make sure he wins in Iowa. We got to make sure he wins in South Carolina, New Hampshire, and Nevada. If we cannot get Bernie to win in those states, he won't be coming to Georgia, and he won't be coming anywhere else. So it's important that we help be, even though if you can go into those states and help be boots on the ground, that's fantastic. If you can't, this is the next best thing. And making phone calls, you can do it from your home. If you have availability to a space, you can also, you know, organize a call party. They're very simple. They're fun. You don't need to do an outlay of great expense, you know, just, you know, like you were having a couple of friends over, you know, throw something together and just put some chips and dips and get some, put some sodas or something out there, or if you have the juice or water, anything. But this is the best thing you can do. If you can do them from home, you can do calls. You can sit like me in your Cheetah Flex pajamas and your hair looking wild and nobody will ever know. So go to the Bernie website, berniesanders.com/phonebank. There's trainings available. There's also a site, Calls for Bernie. I don't have the URL in front of me, but if you search Calls for Bernie, they've got a really great tutorial that will walk you through it. It's very easy and simple that you can do. Also, there is a day of action on the 18th. Light brigades, you know, those signs that you can see from space, and you probably see me with the Bernie Light Brigade sign. We're going to be popping up at overpasses all over the country on the 18th. There's a Reddit. If you go to the Bernie Sanders for President Reddit, you should be able to find it. Get involved. And if you can find Atlanta will be representing. We're going to be popping up in locations all over. Just look for the post to go up on BernieSanders.com. But the Atlanta Light Brigade will be, just look for it. You'll tell us by the blue glow. So I could also use some volunteers who are willing to help. So if you're interested, just hit me up, Stacey Hopkins on Facebook. I've got the Black Burners icon, or just Down South and Dirty. And we would love to have you. We're definitely going to have fun and probably some hot cocoa and stuff. In the burn treatment, something I wanted to talk about and kind of ties into what we're talking about. Bernie's on the ballot. He is getting on the ballot with petition requirements. He's done it in two states already, Texas and Virginia. I believe he got on the ballot that way in South Carolina too, not really sure. But it also speaks to, you know, we've talked about third parties and their difficulties. You know, there are some very serious ballot access challenges that they have, and some of it is you know, money in politics helps prevent them from doing that. But here's one way. If you are organized and you've got a ground game and you anticipate, you're planning to run, get your petition drive done first. Get your troops ready to do that, because we have seen, yes, there are barriers in front of you, but these barriers are not insurmountable. And Bernie is kind of defying, his campaign is defying a lot of things that we've heard, which are true, you know, in terms of the denial of access to the ballot, but they can be overcome. And so they certainly don't make it easy, but I love that he's been able to get that done. And it's been really, really great news to hear it. He's also, he came out, you know, after the latest gun shooting, terrorist attack. Let's just call it whatever it is, a homegrown terrorism, which is that happened after San Bernardino, came out with a statement, a strong statement on that, and also his statement on Chicago. He went there and said everybody needs to step down. You know, not only if you, I don't know if our listeners have been following what has been going on in the Laquan McDonald. You're getting a lot of noise, Scout.
Yeah, we're getting into this portion here. I guess people
are y'all turning up down there.
Yeah, because folks are coming in, you know, the television and started switching over to games, and I muted the phone while you were talking, so I figured it was about time to mute something, so I unmuted my phone.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead while it's nice and quiet.
Right, so you got the Falcons game from the start, so you know you got some of your Rise Up folks that came in, so yeah, you might get a little noisy here for a second. But so I'm gonna go ahead and get into this. But today's show is about campaign finance reform and show me the money. In today's America, we're seeing a presidential campaign that's we've seen presidential campaigns that cost billions of dollars. We got congressional campaigns that are in the millions. And you even see some of our small local campaigns costing tens of thousands of dollars for folks to run. And we know it takes a lot of gold to run a modern political campaign. But the question is that a lot of folks ask is where is this money coming from, who is this paying, and what are we getting in return for it? So that's what we're going to talk about today, because another question is being asked, will it ever happen in one of America's fastest-growing industries? The political industry, whether it's campaign consulting, the political advocacy that's going on, all of those different things requires paid staff now, this, that, and people are making living. So the question that gets asked, okay, if we reform campaign financing, how is it going to affect now some of people's livelihood who have, you know, been doing this, because the political consultant business only has existed since maybe the late 1950s. And so now it's coming into its own as a actual career path for folks. You know, there's going to be some resistance, but how do we find a balance? Because I'm one of those people who's made some money in political campaign, and you've done a little bit in advocacy work, and it's very rewarding work. But at the same time, do we want to take in dirty money?
Right, we need to differentiate that. When we talk about money in politics, you know, we all have to be pragmatic. Campaigns do not run on moonbeams and rainbows and unicorns and good vibrations. You need money in order to run a campaign. I mean, it's a necessity. Somebody's got to pay for mailing. Somebody's got, you know, these phone calls. They require a system that it's very expensive to buy and maintain. So, you know, we're talking about dark, hidden money that's being used against us.
Right.
And we need to clear that up. And these are coming from super PACs, 527, and other tax-exempt groups that are created in order to hide the money. And the problem is that there's regulation out there that's not being enforced that have been forced into inefficiency because of their makeup. The FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, is tasked with overseeing that, and it is quite the mess over there. It's very difficult to enforce. Also, the IRS. And the IRS has been subject to, but they can't even get our refunds out on time because of budget cuts that have been sustained. So it's a really tricky problem. But the biggest problems that we're having, a few people who are controlling and distorting the democratic process, and it's really
how do we take back control of, how do we bring back our democracy and take back control of our republic for the common man? Because, you know, that's one of the things a lot of people are attracted to the Sanders campaigns about, because Sanders does not have a super PAC. There are PACs that support them, and there's a difference between super PACs and PACs. I mean, and as you know, the tax code filings may be the same, but it's about how they are administered and where the money comes from. I mean, there will always be groups that are outside of campaigns who are looking to back one candidate or another. Many of our own supporters, you know, people I know are supporters of Bernie Sanders, our fellow supporters, some of them want to help out, and they want to be able to raise money so that they can help out. Those people would, under the law, form political action committees. And those political action committees would do things to educate and further the cause of the Sanders campaign. But we don't have, what Sanders don't have is a group of billionaires behind him who don't want their names being seen, who are taking money from all kinds of other nefarious interests to by his seat and by his influence so that they can control our government. That is the difference. How do we get that power back into the hands of the people? And that's what we want to talk about. Now, we, you know, before the show, we talked about this is such a vast subject that this is probably going to turn into a two-part show because there's some people we want to come talk to our viewers, our listeners, about this issue who have a lot more expertise and understanding of how this is running. But so what we're going to do today is kind of lay the groundwork for when these experts come in and talk, they will, our listeners will have, won't have such a steep learning curve.
Right. And one of the problems is when we're talking about dark money in politics, you know, the preferred vehicle for that is super PACs. And super PACs are basically, they're called like independent expenditure committees. And it came out of the decision of Citizens United back in 2010. That was a ruling from the D.C. Circuit Court. It really, really has become the preferred method of wealthy individuals and special interests to drown out the voices of average citizens. It's not a hard stretch to say if I'm dropping a million or more, and in 2012, over a little bit over 57% of the money that super PACs raised came from just 47 people giving $1 million. This is in the 2012 cycle. If I'm dropping $1 million, who do you think? If I'm a politician, whose call do you think I'm going to pick up first? The person who dropped $1 million for me, or somebody like you and I? So, and the problem is the responsiveness of the our elected officials, because there was a study done about, you know, responses, who politicians respond to more. And it was found that there was a direct correlation, kind of a duh moment, where politicians responded more to those who had, you know, donated a large amount to their campaign. And this attitude is perpetuated by the political parties because when you get elected, they, you know, up in D.C., most of the time spent by politicians is basically like a boiler room, a telemarketing boiler room, where they spend, you know, the first thing they tell you when you hit the Capitol, you got to start dialing for dollars. Have you made your calls today? And so this puts our politicians on that treadmill where they're spending so much time raising money. And then you've got special interests asking them, you know, I got this bill here, and, you know, we dropped this money. How about, you know, hook us up? Which 9 times out of 10 they do, because now they've got you in their pocket. But we really need to look at how money in politics is actually used, particularly in political campaigns, and what that money in politics buys. And we're seeing a lot of it going down right now in the 2016 campaign. It's used in media. Majority of the money that candidates raise go for TV ad time. That is your most expensive expenditure, paying for these ads. And most people hate these ads. If you're like me, like a month or two before, particularly that final month before election year in October, I don't even cut the TV on because it's back to back to back. These commercials and this ad is paid for by blah, 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 you know, and you just tune out because some of it is the most ridiculous stuff, but it is 30 seconds of soundbited bullshit that's packaged and given to people who are going to be low-information voters. That's who they're grabbing at. That's who they're going for. You get the mailers that some of them, I keep the mailers that I get. You know, I find them as artifacts. But a lot of them, you know, you get something in the mail, you know, that says candidate so-and-so eats babies, you know, and then it just lines up all this ridiculousness that chances are you're not going to fact check during the past. And then the next thing you know, they're sitting up there on Inauguration Day waving at you and saying under their breath, gotcha, suckers. So we really need to, there are things we can do, and one of the biggest things is to stop buying, stop accepting what this money is buying. You know, there's an old saying, some money just can't spend. And some of this money has been, the reason we keep seeing it is because it's been so effective in distorting our elections. But, you know, and we kind of, you know, for me as an activist, we go, you know, we all hit the same brick wall of money and politics, whether you're for, you know, police or criminal justice reform, whether you're for environmental issues, whether you are for health issues, human health issues, no matter what the area of advocacy you're on, you keep running into a block wall, because I can't count how many times I've been to on congressional visits or just talking with politicians, and they're, you know, we're saying we've got gun control. That's a really good issue to look at, because something that polls so high with the majority of the people isn't getting passed. Why is it not getting passed? Because the lobbyists and special interests have already greased the palm. And when you see things that aren't getting passed because, not because it's the consensus of the people that they don't want it, it's simply because there's somebody else more powerful with a lot more money who's keeping you from having it. And it has gotten just downright ridiculous. And we talked about, you know, Scout, we talked about some of the things coming in, you know, some of the other factors. We talked about labor. We talked about the church. We also dabbled a little bit in nonprofits. But it really has gotten to be such a problem where people are becoming disillusioned and jaded and dropping out of the process. And this is something that we, the people, can take back.
And that makes me come in, that makes me think about, and that makes me think about, you know, one of the dark sides of the, you know, why we need political campaign finance reform is because we got entities that are forming now that are raising money, and they are saying that they are working for a particular goal. But, and in the beginning, it sounds like something that's pretty decent that we would really want to deal with, but we are not getting the results that we want, and people are getting rich, but they're able to get away with it because they say, hey, we're working on a political campaign, so our candidate didn't win. We spent money on this, we spent money on that, and we just lost. But it was because the voters didn't come out and do what they were supposed to do, or they come up with some excuse. But at the end of the day, these people were just hustling us, and there was no way for us to hold them accountable to what they were doing. And that's one of those other things that need to be coming into finance reform, is holding these groups accountable. If you're raising money and you say you're going to do X, Y, and Z, it shouldn't have to take an investigative reporter to come behind you to expose that you didn't build the people. That should be some type of accountability. And
right.
There's not.
And that's transparency. That's the biggest issue because, I mean, let's be honest, there's nothing wrong with a group of people who want to express their views about a candidate and what their positions are on issues that truly matter. I don't want to limit that, but there has to be some sort of regulations when you have groups who, and a lot of these groups try to come off as grassroots. You know, the conservatives, you know, they've got Freedom Works and what's that other one? Americans for Prosperity. That, you know, they kind of came off and got the Tea Party all wee-weed up and brought themselves over as grassroots, but they really weren't. And, you know, the spending and you have C4 groups, you know, on the left that do that, raise, you know, money. But most of them are transparent and will disclose who is donating. The problem are some groups, you know, there are different statuses by the IRS for nonprofit groups, and some have to disclose them, some do not. The problem are the ones who are permitted to spend money to influence elections, but are not required to disclose who their donors are. And, you know, those are usually the ones who hide under the C4 or the C6 section code of the Internal Revenue Service. There's also, like I said, 527s and a couple other ones. But it is really a problem when it comes to the scope and the outside spending. It, you know, now we're talking about billion-dollar elections. You know, first we were talking about hundreds of thousands. Then we were talking about millions. Now we're talking about billion-dollar elections. And if you tell someone, you know, you can be president, well, not really, because you're going to have to get up a $1 billion. That should send warning flags off to anybody, because that no longer means that the democratic process, and yes, we at Down South and Dirty understand we are not a democracy. We are a republic that has democratic processes as part of its governance. So we get that, but this is not a government for by and of the people when you have a small group who is basically controlling our elections. And that money in politics is effective. I dare say it's probably more effective on the lower level than, say, the federal level, because we have seen instances where we did push back, and that was President Obama's election in 2008 and his reelection in 2012. That's a good example of how to reject money in politics. You know, we saw the Obama Truth Team and, you know, combating against what was coming out on TV and in media, but there are some simple ways we can do it, and our technology has made it kind of easy to do that. But in Georgia, in particular, we have had a hard time doing this on the local level, because Georgia is like, no, we're number one for ethics and the need for effective campaign, and it really is stunning. And, you know, you really don't need a lot. Your money goes, you get more bang for the buck locally, don't you think, Scout? I think we lost it.
Put more bang for the buck than we do, you know, on a local level than we do when we're talking about federal raising, because, I mean, all policies is local. So you, your mayors and your city councilmen, they are the ones who hire our police chief. And our police chief are the ones who hire the police who are supposed to come and protect and serve our community. So when you get to talking about things like Black Lives Matter, this, that, and the other, this is a direct way of being able to affect the actual conditions inside of your neighborhood. It's through a city council or mayoral race. If you're talking about your taxes that you pay on your property and your sales taxes, those are things that directly are affected by local government. So we have to be willing to, as we look at how we finance campaigns and how we spend money on campaigns, a lot of these issues from a grassroots position when it comes to donating money, this and those are things that we probably should focus on heavily from a grassroots position than anything else other than canvassing and knocking on doors and making phone calls and volunteering, because it's all a part of the same dynamic. And I know a lot of people, when we say grassroots, automatically think, they think, oh, we're doing it without a budget. But that's crazy. because yeah, you still can't. Got the right. So
yeah, there's no
those things.
And I think people get it twisted, you know, when you know, those advocates for democracy, you know, when we talk about corporate personhood and Citizens United, with, like everything else, we tend to go all or nothing, you know. One of the things labor is not really too crazy about it, because when we talk about, and there are some remedies to help get money out of politics, reversing Citizens United is one of them. And
right.
There's a constitutional amendment out. Bernie Sanders has long been a champion of that and introducing that. And his whole campaign is a textbook on how to reject money in politics. And he's hanging in there. But because if you're number two, you're alive. But it is... We really, really have to think about how we look at it and what's actually being said. No one's saying, you know, that we want to get money out of politics. We have to continuously reiterate that it's the dark money that's being used against you by special interests that is really taking away your voice in the ballot box. That's the problem. Labor, you won't see labor get behind this too much, because labor, Citizens United does affect labor, and I totally get that. And the difference is, you know, you will hear those who go, well, labor does it too. Yeah, but most of the time, labor doesn't use the money the way that a Sheldon Adelson would. You know, that's a nuanced conversation. But and we talked about the problems with labor before, but people really need to start grasping it, because this is the number one problem that we have to fix in order to fix Congress. In order to start, you know, we can come up with all the policies on change and legislation. We can't get it through if we've got elected officials who are not working for us and they're working for the money. You know, we talk about the golden rule, and he who has the gold makes all the rules. And right now we've got some people who are doing that, which really brings us, you know, to the crux of inequality. This is one of the places where inequality is launched, you know, economic and political inequality. Certain people can't get a seat at the table because money is crowding them or forming a firewall preventing them to do so. And political equality is like, that's the basic of how our system works and the presumption of how that table should look like. You know, there is a, you know, it's built into, you know, the documents that basically form the doctrine of the United States. And at the heart of it is one person, one vote. And without that, you really can't.
Yeah.
You don't have a public sphere or that is truly equal, and where everyone has an ability to raise their voice and to be heard.
You know, this is one of the things that we can see how dark money affects our political process. Let's take the, you know, earlier in the show, we talked about the terrorist incident and at Planned Parenthood. The serious incidents at San Bernardino, we talked about those incidents, which in America becomes a very intense part of the gun control debate, where we just had our Republican Congress vote down a law that you would have thought would have been a no-brainer, which would have not allowed people on the terrorist watch list to be able to buy guns. You can't get on an airplane, but you can buy a gun. And we know that the lobbyists and the money came from the NRA and the other gun groups to keep the pressure on being able to sell these weapons on some kind of misguided ideological basis that they want. But this is one of those things that we're looking at. We're looking at that the gun lobby is endangering the Republic because they want to continue to make money and make guns and sell them and are telling people, well, if they take them off, if you can put people on the terrorist watch list, they can't buy a gun, then the Obama administration is going to put you on the watch list so they can come get your gun. And nobody wants your gun. We're just seeing people who we think are a threat to our national security should not have weapons. But the dark money is saying, hey, we don't want to take a chance out on losing any money whatsoever. We done built this political narrative around guns for everybody. But it's amazing that the gun has become the symbol for the right to protecting freedom when in the original founding fathers' mind, it was the vote.
Right.
That one man, one vote. And see, the Second Amendment is only a backup to the ability of the one man, one vote. It's all about if the one man and one vote stops working, then we might have to, at some point in time, utilize the Second Amendment solution. But we got to make sure that first, let's spend money and let's back up. Let's have the money back up, making sure that we have universal right to carry a voter registration card. You know, let me have that right to carry. The right to carry a voter registration card instead of the right to carry a weapon. You know, if they are just, if both are fundamental to the freedom of our nation, then why isn't the money banned back? Why are we on the left not putting forth, you know, since I've heard the analogy that we got to utilize Citizens United to our advantage until we can get rid of it. Then let's do that. Let's promote some of our issues and let's do some of the same things. But as you said before, we have an issue on our side that is it's a zero sum game. It's either all or nothing. And we're not going to be willing to utilize the ability to do what we need to do to win the battles we need to win in the short term so we can win the war. And I mean,
right.
It's very, very. So, I mean,
well,
it's one of
go ahead.
I mean, it's one of those things that it's upsetting to me. It's really upsetting.
Well, I mean, at some point, you really want to throw your hands up, but you can't, you know. I mean, it would really be easy for, you know, people like us to just say, you know, let it burn. Just let them have it, and we'll rebuild with whatever's left. I just can't accept that. I just can't. And at some point, we are culpable because our apathy, our inattention, our misplaced faith got us into this situation. We actually believed that the people we were electing were going to do something. Yeah, we got played a couple of times, but I'm seeing a resurgence and a rejection of all of that, and why I'm passionate about the fight and why I do the things that I do, why you do what you do. You know, and this issue kind of bleeds into so many other aspects. You know, you brought up about gun violence. You know, a lot of these companies or these for-profit businesses that are using money to influence our elections, if you ask their shareholders, and most companies exist in order to serve their shareholders, that what they're championing may be in direct opposition of what their shareholders believe. Shareholders, they want a profit, but they also have their ideas and opinions too. So it does, you know, it's very problematic when you see shareholders, and we have seen some shareholders pop up and say, "You're not speaking for me." It's very rare, but it does happen. But you are, if you're a company doing this, you're effectively taking the voice away from the individuals that form your shareholders. So it's really, really, it's frustrating, and we just need a little accountability. We want a little bit more transparency. Hopefully we'll get Ted Terry back to talk about super PACs and PACs and the difference. Because, you know, it is kind of funny when you hear Democrats talk about it. We're going to use this. You know, we need to keep this and use it to our advantage. I don't, to be honest, Democrats aren't built for that. And it's very hard when you have something so seductive as money. It's easy to say, I'm going to get this money and I'm going to use it for good. Well, 9 times out of 10, we see people, you know, what better good is myself? And that's the problem. If they can maintain their ethics about it and use it in the right way, I say great. But, you know, right now, you know, we're seeing we've got a presidential race on the Democratic side where you have two candidates who are embracing super PACs. We have one, Bernie Sanders, who's not. We've got a super PAC that was formed by David Brock, Media Matters, who is a pro-Hillary. He's a pro-Hillary person, and he's using his PAC. You know, there were some attacks against Bernie Sanders that kind of backfired. That's the problem when Democrats say we're going to form a super PAC, because you get a bit of Stockholm syndrome when you get things. And you know, Democrats like power just as much as the Republicans. And right now, Democrats have to rebuild the trust between their voters, and in some parts it's kind of damaged. I don't think they're ready for that. And you can fight it. You know, this is like the same with the gun argument, where in order to get rid of guns, we need more guns. You know, if that argument makes no sense to you, then why does the money argument with Citizens United make sense? I don't get it. I really don't. So, but it's there are some groups out there who have been working for years on the issue, and there are a lot of remedies. You've got the, of course, the constitutional amendment, and that there's a wide coalition, and there's quite a few bills that are just sitting in Congress. They're just sitting there, people. Nobody has to introduce anything. Bernie Sanders has one. There's quite a few in both the House and the Senate that have been introduced to repeal Citizens United. We've even had them show up in the Georgia State House. Nan Orrick introduced one last year and I believe the year before that. To repeal Citizens United. Not a peep. Georgians did not really press on it, and it basically died out. And this is another part of the problem. If we all agree that we're against this and we don't like this, and there are bills who are sitting out there and we're not supporting them, we're not pushing them, we're not making calls, you know, for me, I'm kind of tapped into the democracy groups who are doing work. And, you know, we recently, I don't know if anybody remembers the story of the guy who flew the helicopter onto the lawn of Congress and got arrested and got, he's going to do some time for it, just to deliver some letters to members of Congress asking them to repeal Citizens United. And he got locked up for it. And not only did the story barely raise a blip on the radar, but the people themselves, you know, we keep talking about you got to get out in the streets, you know, you got to have your voice heard. That's one issue where, you know, when it comes to money and politics, everybody gets a little too quiet. And we really, if you really want this, you need to get with some of these groups that have been doing the work. Move to Amend. They're also not big on, I mean, they're also big on repealing Citizens United, but combating corporate personhood. Public Citizen, Free Speech for the People, MoveOn.org, Common Cause. All of these groups have been diligently and doggedly working to do that. So if getting money out of politics is something that you're interested in, definitely patch in with these groups. Represent U.S. Or represent us. I always get it wrong. But actually, we will have someone with us next week to talk about it. They've got an anti-corruption act. That is, and it's definitely a great issue to, this is a great platform and piece of legislation that starts from the bottom up. They have had some wins. Most notably, they had some wins this past November with cities, you know, and it's basically bringing ethics and campaign reform on the local level. You can find them at represent.us. And they've really got a stunningly great website with plenty of resources for people. But that's going to be the key. It's got to start from the bottom up. Congress right now couldn't agree on lunch. So, in all fairness, I mean, we can't even get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified. So having a constitutional amendment is going to be a difficult haul. We need to look at and throw everything up against the wall and whatever sticks, sticks. But it won't work until people start raising their voices and get involved. It's not really, I'm not chastising anybody or anything. It's just a simple fact. If you want it, you got to fight to get it. Because those who are controlling it, they're not going to give it up just because you ask them nicely. You're going to have to fight for it. So, Scout, we are coming up on the 3 o'clock hour. We got any phone calls?
Well, no, we don't. We don't have any phone. We have nobody's called in.
See,
I'm getting ready.
Y'all got to call in and talk to us. 657-383-0995. Call us up and tell us what you feel.
Well, I'm going to be, you know, Stacey, you're going to be taking the show. I'm going to go back to the table. I will be listening.
I'm mad at you.
I'll be queuing up. Yeah. I'm going to be assured that the next time we do this, you will be.
I was gonna make your cookies and everything, and then you out there drinking and having cigars.
But I'll still be at the production board. But that's an interesting conversation taking place right here, and I want to try to get some of these folks to be able to come on to the show at a later date.
Shoot some video and we'll throw them up on the Downtown Dirty site.
There's some photographs being taken. We're going to have some of them.
Okay.
So you go ahead and you keep the show rolling, and I'll be here. So if I hear something and I need to jump in, I will be there. But I'm going to go out and get into this car so I can get deep into this conversation here, because there's stuff going on that really needs probably some of my input into. So
okay.
I'm gonna mute out and keep on rolling.
Okay. Well, forget about calling in because it'll be hard for me to talk to you. So
no, I'll still sit there and I'll send you a signal letting you know if somebody's calling in or not. All right.
Well, then call in, people. Call in and talk to me, because Scout's leaving me all alone, and I can't be all alone for 30-995 if you're listening. But we're talking about money in politics and how it is used. And I have to say, you know, Scout and I worked together on a campaign here in Georgia for a Senate race. And we were kind of stunned at some of the things that we saw. You know, you hear about it, but until you actually jump down that rabbit hole and you see how money is being spent against you, it is really, really, you just have to sit back and go, damn. And we saw, you know, both of us worked on Dr. Rad's campaign, Bronco Radulovici, and he ran against Michelle Nunn for the Democratic nomination here in Georgia for the Senate seat, which is now occupied by Mr. Perdue. I can't remember the man's first name. That's how much I think about him. But David Perdue, my bad. But one of the things, you know, one of the first things we noticed was, you know, this was truly a grassroots campaign. We had very little money. but we were planning to make it work. And one of the things we couldn't, you never saw a Dr. Rad commercial because we couldn't afford it. The airtime was astronomical, and it had all, most of it had been purchased by the time we came on board with the campaign. And it was really, we were just taken aback at what some of the things that we saw. And, you know, it basically has built the cottage industry up. There are armies of consulting to provide anything from polling to, you know, ground game strategies, which are necessary. But there are some people out there who just, it's like a hustle. And, you know, it was just really stunning to see people come in and get that money and get out. And, you know, win or lose, they win. And so we saw, you know, just how it was being used against people. You know, the media, the reason, sometimes the reason you hear one particular candidate being highlighted by another is because these media outlets know that they're going to bring some ad revenue with them. So, and it is a bias. You know, there's no way the media can deny that it doesn't. Organizations who are beholden to other, you know, our opposition because of the money that was being, you know, slipped through hands. And it was really, you know, it was very, very frustrating because it's hard enough to run a campaign. It's very difficult when you're facing a juggernaut. And that was, and this was a state race, but it was a juggernaut of money that was coming at us. And, but we hung in as long as we could. For our candidate and for the other candidates, they did fairly well, but it was just completely mind-blowing to see how it was done and in the subversive ways in which it was done so. But it can be fixed. It really, really can be fixed. And but it's got to start from us. And we also have to just really, really be aware of how that money's being used against us. And how we can reject it. One of the ways is supporting candidates like Bernie Sanders, and I think that's a lot of his appeal and where none of the other candidates can touch him on, because he can truly say he is being financed by small donors. The average donation is about $30, and it comes from people like you and I. And, you know, some people may laugh off the $30. If you are out here in this world struggling, you know how expensive it is to be poor. And that $30, is it might as well be a million sometimes. And it's really that serious for some people. So it's really to see people take money that they could very well use for something else. And you know, sending their laugh to a candidate really, really says something about the need, the rejection of money in politics and what we see. Another way is the push for public funding of elections. That's been another part of some of the reforms that have come up in conversation. You see a part of that with the on your income tax, when you're asked to give money, that is for federal elections. But we need to see more of a push on the local level, because, as I said, there is a really, really severe need. Money in politics on the local level is the best bang for your buck, and it is very, very It's just absolutely necessary. It really is. For local candidates, if you come in with someone, if you're running a race and you've got somebody who's well-heeled, or got somebody behind them, you really don't have to worry about a ground game. You get a couple you order up some signs, blanket the city with them or the area that the district you're running in. You get some mailers, you know, you can either go, you know, the candidate X eats babies kind of thing or get nasty. And they get nastier the closer you get to election day. And if it's a tight race. And you get some robocalls set up, and you're pretty much done. It is campaigns done by automation. There's no longer getting out and meeting the people, actually talking about your views, explaining why to either those who support it or detractors. None of that applies anymore. It's just the money and how you throw it out there. And, public financing of elections. Now, there's some debate on the pros and cons about it, but public elections are a way to make sure to kind of even out that playing field. We talk a lot or we hear a lot of talk about inequality and evening out the playing field, for everyone to have a voice, yada, yada, yada. Well, public financing is a way to do that, to make sure that not one particular donor or entity has more of an influence on the outcome of an election than anyone. It sure would be better than what we have now. What we have now is basically the Wild Wild West in terms of public financing, and people just got so much money, they don't know what to do with it, so they're buying candidates. They're working on buying the air and the sun as we speak, but until then, politicians will do. And it is, instituting expenditure limits, That's one of the other side of the coin and what's, repealing Citizens United and the son of Citizens United. It's actually two rulings that made it worse. But both of those speak about unlimited expenditures, and you need a limit. When you have people who are spending, and clearly, I just got to sit back in awe. If you've got a couple of million, like double-digit millions to spend on elections, where have you been all my life? I only need a fraction of that. But that's kind of saying something. You've got a whole heap of money in your pocket. If you're sitting around and you can't figure out what to do other than to spend, I'm just going to buy me a politician. That is so gangster, and I need for people to just sit back and marinate and appreciate that. That is gangster when you sit back and you have so much money where you just figure, I'm just going to buy, all the things that you could do in the world and do good. You're going to go and buy a politician. And now they're snapping them up. It is really, really troubling to see that. There are two states, not two states. There are some states that do offer clean elections. Most notably, I believe it's Arizona, Connecticut, and Maine. I think those are who candidates are encouraged to collect small donations from individuals. Arizona really has a great program out there. In order to qualify for their clean elections program, you have to raise $5 contributions from at least 200 people, and in return, the state gives you, it will provide you money in an amount equal to the expenditure limit, whatever that limit was set. And the limit, I think, for 2014 was around, I think it was a little over a million for governor, and for legislative positions, I think it was like 22,000 or something like that. Now, not to say that people will choose to not use that system and work around it, but it's a start, and it kind of helps you determine who's coming in, I want to say, relatively clean, and who's not being bought or sold. that's one of the other ways we can do that. Bill Moyer, he is a really, really big champion of reform, and he's also outlaid a couple of ways. One of the ways, and I have to give big ups to Lawrence Lessig for his presidential run, but also his tireless advocacy work on this issue. I came across the work of Professor Lessig when I was with the Coffee Party. He was one of the original founders behind it, and he really, really has been a strong advocate. I think his campaign would have also helped push back, just like Senator Sanders, to fix our elections. And one of the first things he said that always stuck in my head is, you got to fix Congress first. And we're absolutely right, because we have a Congress that has been bought and sold. We have state houses who have been bought and sold. Your school boards, your city councils, chances are there's somebody back who's in there. And I'm not saying all of them are, but chances are you got to follow the money. And following the money, since we're talking, you know, I'm on the stream of consciousness thing. Scout, don't ever do this to me again. But followthemoney.org or Open Secrets. Those are two great websites that will help you follow the money of who's in pocket. Locally, it's a little bit more difficult to research, but chances are they will have that in their database. Not saying people are dirty, but at least you know if a candidate is getting, if you are for environmental issues and you see you have a candidate who's taking a lot of money from, you know, oil and gas industry, chances are you're not going to get what you want. And you're going to have to come at them from another angle. Until we can start, you know, voting these people out, because in certain districts they're protected by gerrymandered districts, and that's a whole nother issue in itself. But until then, we can push back against them as much as we can. We have to start organizing to vote those. You know, there's a saying, and it was a part of a campaign, money out, voters in. We just have to start picking them off one by one. You know, just really picking them off and restoring our process back in the hands of the people. And it's, I know it's difficult because, you know, I just look at my inbox and I'm just inundated with, you got to help on this, and this issue is the issue you need to work on, and we need your help. I'm probably no different than anybody else out there who gets me. But at the, no matter, and once again, no matter what you advocate for, you keep coming back into to this one big wall. And it's really, really something that we all need to raise our voices up and start addressing, because our elections, you know, are being swung to certain individuals. It is keeping us from, whether you're Black Lives Matter or you are, you know, advocating for climate change, no matter what it is, you really are not going to get anything in terms of political reform passed until you get rid of these folks who are listening. They're not listening to you. They're not trying to hear what you got to say. They're listening to the money. You know, we saw Hillary Clinton recently try to divest herself of, you know, these private prison corporations who have been donating to her campaign, which kind of leads to more of the reason, you know, why people distrust her. I do not hold much trust in her for this. It's kind of hard to say that you're going to be on my team after you've been taking money from people who have been locking my people up. I don't need a political degree or you know, some sort of intellectual paper to figure that out. I think politicians are finally getting to understand this. You know, Scout brought up gun manufacturers earlier. There was a assembly, I believe someone out in California, a congressional member out, who asked to be taken off his mailing list. That's really great, you know, but it's pretty much symbolic. Okay, yeah, take me off. I can opt it out of your mailing list, but if you're still sending me money and if you've rated me as A+, chances are there is some money that slid up in there. You know, until you stop saying, when they bring you these bills and say, I need for you to vote this way, it's really not going to ever, ever stop it. So it is coming up. We got about 15 minutes left, and it's, it's 3:15, and if you are calling in, call in if you want to talk to us. Tell us how you feel. How do you feel about the election cycle? How much of money in politics affects how you look at the candidates? Are you looking at it? Tell me about how you feel about political ads and the mailers that come in. Do you like them? Does it help you form your opinion? Or just come and argue with me. 657-383-0995. But we really, the money in politics, it sets up an immediate conflict of interest. Because once you come in taking the money, you're not listening to me. And this is one of the biggest things we come up with, we hear all the time. I was out yesterday doing a test run of voter registration. And it was kind of disheartening to hear people, particularly, and this was a majority African-American community, where people were like, well, I'm not going to vote because it doesn't matter, because nobody's going to listen to me. And, you know, you do your best to kind of argue down, and there are some arguments you can make because that's kind of self-defeating. But at some point, you kind of go, you know, they're right. And you want to tell them, and I, you know, you're right. They're not listening to you. And this is why. This is exactly why they're not listening to you. And they know they can do this. Politicians know they can do this. And when they know nobody's going to hold them accountable, yeah, they're going to take the money. They're definitely going to take the money. So it's really important that people are up and up on this and letting them know you are ready to hold them accountable. We simply have not done that enough. I'm looking at something that says Wall Street and financial institutions spent more than twice as much money in the 2014 congressional election than they did 10 years ago, and they combined, that means Democrat and Republican congressional and presidential election. Hey, we got a caller? Scout? Okay. Well, I thought we had a caller coming in. But, and if you're listening, you want to call, we got about 12 minutes left. Call in 657-383-0995. Sound up. Let us know what you feel about money in politics. Scout has, he's out there enjoying his cigar and craft beer and left me. But I'll fix him. But we are talking about money in politics and the problems of it, some of the ways we can help fix it, how it affects inequality, political inequality ties into economic inequality. But we talked about public financing of elections briefly, and I think we're going to go ahead and do this again next week. We're going to have some guests and ask some hard questions. So if you're coming in late today, you can catch this up on a podcast or and be sure to listen to us next week. We will definitely have somebody here from Represent to talk about the Anti-Corruption Act and the other reforms, that other types of reforms out there. We're going to try to line up some people, some other people to talk about super PACs and also how the need for ethics and campaign reform on the local level. Particularly if you're a candidate running right now, we'd also love for you to call in and talk about some of the ways how you've seen money in politics be used against you. We've heard some horror stories out there of just exactly the high amounts of shenanigans that go out there. I mean, folks just, they are just wilding out. And there's some, you have to have actually been on that side. I don't think you guys can appreciate the true crazy that is a political campaign. And some of the things that go off, you can either alternately want to crawl up in a fetal position or cry and laugh hysterically at the same time. It is stunning, some of the things that they do. And it's like, and it should be illegal. And some of it actually is if you or I were to do it, but there's laws to protect other people who do. But you know, the money that is being spent and the treadmill that we put candidates on is just really, really taking what we have and just blowing it out of the water. And we hope that people will start looking into paying more attention to it because, to be honest, the democracy issues haven't gotten a lot of love in the media as it should. It's uncomfortable. It's definitely uncomfortable for the media to talk about because the media is beholden to it. Money in politics has fostered a cottage industry, which the major media outlets enjoy thoroughly. So they're not going to tell you that because, you know, they love election years, particularly presidential ones, because that's the big money. You know, local stations, they love the, you know, midterms and the off years. But the majors, they love presidential elections. They absolutely adore them. They literally make it rain. And this is where a lot of that money goes towards in politics, in political campaigns. So, It's difficult. It's definitely not insurmountable. This is one of the reasons why we here at Down South and Dirty feel the burn. That's the one issue where no candidate, Democrat or Republican, can touch him on. And, you know, I don't expect Bernie Sanders, you know, to pick up the phone when I call D.C., but I know that his administration will be a lot more responsive to the needs and requests of people like you and I than say if I was Stacey Hopkins Inc. and I just dropped a couple of billion on him and I'm like, dude, you know, I gave you that money. I'm gonna need you to talk to me. Which is basically what it allows them to do. It is, people get mad when I put it in these terms, but I'm a blunt woman and I appreciate clarity. It is strong arm robbery. And if you think I'm lying, argue me down. Tell me it isn't. But it is nothing more than sheer strong arm. It's just robbery. One of the things that's also been talked about is matching funds. That's also a way to help even it out. I believe in Hawaii, the governor there used matching funds. His challenger chose not to, and they were spending some big money out there. The governor, he won, and he did it with $1.5 million, which was the maximum. But the difference was the challenger, I think his name was Iona, something like that. He didn't want to participate in the public matching because he was getting his money from, you know, he wasn't getting a lot of small donor money, which is the difference when you opt into, like, matching funds or public funding. That is, the focus is on small donors. He was looking for the big folks, and, you know, that was kind of the problem. But that's one way where just money did not spend. It was not effective. Those are just a few of the ways we're going to talk about more of them next week. We're going to try to bring you a lineup of what's going on, and we'll be keeping an eye on the crazy that's going on in the world. We didn't get too much into our dirty list, and I don't know if Scout's still with us, but my dirty list, and since I got like 5 minutes left, I'm going to go on this real quick. I think we're going to have to give Donald Trump a permanent place on the – he may be a Down South and Dirty all-star, but the recent rally where he had a Trump supporter do a – quote-unquote, do a little routine. And for black people, we all read that, and we were like, okay, see, you really just have gone too. He's on my dirty list for asking her to do a little routine. Next thing you know, he'll have black folks in doing a jig and blackface and doing the Amos and Andy thing. But he just gets more ridiculous as the days go. Mayor Reed gets my dirty list. Mayor Reed of the city of Atlanta for you want to use eminent domain to tear down those houses in Peoplestown when there's already a plan out there that would save those houses and address the drainage problem. So you'll use eminent domain to tear those houses down, but there was a report on WSB TV about the abandoned houses in historic West End that are providing, it's been a public safety hazard, but also it helps, the presence of these homes and communities brings down your tax base. It affects your funding for schools, as schools are primarily funded through taxes. So I just need to know why eminent domain is so quick to be used in one neighborhood and not a problem, and we can't do anything about houses who have sat around, and particularly the areas of South Atlanta, South Fulton County, and South DeKalb County. If we're quick to use them in other places, you know, when a developer wants them, why can't it be used for the safety of neighborhoods? Then all of a sudden we have to be prudent, blah, 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 blah. And I think last on my dirty list is the Cobb County police officer who pulled a brother over on Mapleton Parkway. The stop happened last month, and he basically told the dude, you need to go back to Fulton County, which, you know, Fulton County is Atlanta. Or it was a county that has Atlanta, and told them, I don't care about your people. Kind of sums up to me why I don't do Cobb County much. You know, I'll come up and visit, but I got to get out of there. Cobb County has always been a county that has made no bones about how they feel about anybody who's not white, whether you're a person of color, LGBT, whatever. If you ain't a Christian, gun-toting white person, you need to do what you need to do and get on out of Cobb County. I know that's not true of all Cobb County residents, but this is the public perception that is being reinforced by actions like this. So that's my dirty list for this week. I know Scout's going to have his own, but we are coming down to the wire. It's 3:29, and like I said, this is going to end up being a two-parter. We'll be back next Sunday from 2 to 3:30, and we hope you'll call in. We will definitely have some guests where we can go into more detail about it. If you're interested, let us know how you feel. Hit us up on Facebook. And Scout,
I am stating
you're back.
That.
Okay.
You got like 15 seconds.
Walking on that. Well, I'm Stacey Hopkins, Scout from, and Scout Smith, who's down at the Highland Bar. We want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on Down South and Dirty.
Peace.
Peace.